Okay, we are ready to begin. I want to welcome everyone, each of you back to week number two of Parenting Today's Team. I hope you all had a wonderful week and perhaps gave some thought to some of the ideas that were mentioned last week. And those of you that are new, perhaps that are joining, welcome. To fill you in, we spoke last week about the world of adolescence, what that world is made up of, what it feels like to be in it, to live in it, so that we have a whole other level of either empathy or understanding to our kids so that we can connect. And like I mentioned, this week, we're shifting over to ourselves as parents, to become more aware, more mindful, more insightful into what is going on for each and every one of us as we go through parenting, especially parenting children that are going through adolescence in a teen period. There is a lot of information, a lot of content I want to get to. And I'm going to try to pack it all in to tonight, as well as get to some of your questions, which you can write in the Q&A, and hopefully we'll have time, like we did last week at the very end, to address them. I want to begin with a story. It's a story my grandfather, Baba Shaman, would tell me over many times. It was a story that happened to him when he was a teenager. His teenage years were very different than most of ours and our children. He had survived World War II, the Holocaust, and he found himself right after the war roaming. He had no idea who in his family had survived or who hadn't, and he didn't know where to go. He had stayed, you know, in Europe right after the war. And at that point, he joined a group called the Partisans. And that group, some of you have read or have watched about those years and what the Partisans were about. They would roam the forest and look for any survivors, Nazi soldiers, and would hunt them down after all that they had gone through. And he was one of those people that joined my grandfather and got a uniform, got a gun, and spent months after the war doing that. Finally, word came to him that there was surviving family back home in his hometown. He was from a small Hungarian hometown, Debrecen. Took a train, and he couldn't believe that there were survivors, hadn't seen anyone for years. And as he got closer, he got to his town. He didn't know exactly who was left. Walked through his village, and much of it was not there anymore. Hadn't been home in many years. And he recognized, obviously, where to go down the streets, back to his own home. And he knocked on the door, and he did not know who was going to be on the other side of it. And the scene that he would say over was, as the door opened, he saw a man who obviously he recognized very well, who looked 100 years older than the last time he saw him. And it was his father. His own father had survived the war, and he embraced him. And they held one another in each other's arms for a long time without saying anything. And then his own father looked at him. He was dressed in like an army uniform with a gun, and he asked him, what's been going on after the war? What are you up to now? And he explained to him that he's in the forest and he's hunting down any Nazi sympathizers, soldiers. And his father, he remembers this his whole life, his father looked at him and said, that's not why you survived. You didn't survive to destroy the evil and hunt that down. You survived to rebuild a new world, And from that moment on, it was a new mission that he said he had in that interaction between his own father and him. I say all of this story as an introduction to tonight. The first thing we as parents have to realize is there's a big difference between the position, the vantage point of us as parents and our children. The relationship is not one of, you know, mutual give and take equals. We see in our children our future. You know, there's a natural selflessness towards our children. We see, you know, generations to come, hope, maybe everything that we didn't do in them. And we want to, you know, convey to them a mission. They don't look at us in that same way. It's a different direction. We are the past to them. We, you know, perhaps have given a lot to them. But there isn't that natural, you know, selflessness, sacrifice in that other direction. Yeah, I think it's the Maharal says that the first man that ever lived in the world, Adam, so he had children. And therefore, man and woman have a natural love towards children. But the first man and woman didn't have parents. So there is something innate in people that is more natural to be selfless, to love children. There's no commandment, love your children. I mean, it's natural. There's a commandment to honor and respect. Because, you know, if everyone's looking, you know, towards building and the future, so we look towards our children. And our children hopefully have some, you know, appreciation to the past. But again, it's them going in that other direction. And we have to be, our very first understanding as parents, we have to realize, hold on, there's something in this relationship that is supposed to be imbalanced. Many of us intuit this and we know this, but just to clarify to all of us, the way we see one another is going to be very different. It's going to be very, very different. And therefore, being mindful as parents, we have to realize, point number one, that there's a tremendous difference, that there is a certain selflessness in the parenting process, not just to our young infants, but throughout that process. It doesn't necessarily go like other relationships that have that two-way fulfillment. In that light, we have to realize that we come to it also at a whole different level of maturity. We're coming to this relationship as hopefully adults, and we're dealing with children that are still developing. And there are practical things that, if we come out of this realization, we can hopefully have that maturity that we can sometimes, maybe even more than sometimes, let them have the last word in a conversation. Adolescents very often feel like they have to, but we want to, you know, not allow that. That's sometimes disrespectful in our opinions. We have to, you know, demand, of course, respect. But if there's a back and forth and that's something that they need, to be able to, in that more of a selfless way, understand that in the big picture, coming to it from a more mature place as parents, understanding that we're at a different level than them, we're able to tolerate that. The ability for us from time to time to apologize when we said something that we shouldn't to them. You know, some of us feel that's a terrible message. There's something wrong with that. There's something humble and selfless in that ability. We model that to them. Hey, I was impatient with you. I said something I shouldn't have said. My parenting, as we'll see, doesn't have to be a perfect, you know, act that we never make mistakes on. It's beautiful to model that, hey, we can mess up, but that we can come to them and sometimes say, hey, I was nervous or I was anxious about something on my own. So this awareness that there's this difference in the relationship, both in terms of natural love, you know, in the direction towards our children versus back from them to us, and also level obviously of maturity. And in that selflessness, it's, you know, we all know the image of a little girl or a little boy riding on their bike, and we're holding the back seat, and they're learning to ride, and they're building in their confidence. And we slowly, you know, run with them, and we're holding it. And as they get sturdy, they don't look back, and we slowly let go. And, you know, and in that, we see them riding off. There's that imagery of a certain sacrifice, you know, and I'll use the word selflessness, where the child then proceeds to look forward. And if it looks bad, you know, sometimes they'll fall. And they need to, you know, very much focus there. I'm not saying to, of course, not have the proper respect and appreciation. But from our end, to understand and to accept that, I'll use the word, sometimes painful reality, that there is something, you know, selfless in that, that it doesn't have the mutuality to it. I'm repeating that because we have to understand and appreciate that there's something significant and something accurate about that type of a description of this relationship. And we often lose sight of it. And I was recently, I was on the boardwalk, and there was a mother that had bought ice cream for her children. And a small little example, and she kept on asking the kids who were eating the ice cream, "So guys, how is the ice cream? Is it really, really, really good? Are you guys loving it?" And the kids were just eating the ice cream really happy. And "Guys, I don't hear you. How yummy and how good is the ice cream?" Very innocent, nice, sweet interaction. But what that parent in that simple interaction was really pursuing was, I want you guys to tell me how great and how awesome, you know, of a time I'm giving you by buying you this ice cream, right? It was this like seeking, you know, to receive back, and that's natural and understandable. But we have to understand, hey, to be able to really give and to be able to see them enjoying something, and to be able to also step back and allow them, you know, to be that person that isn't necessarily going to always and adequately appreciate. Of course, we have to teach and have to model that they should be grateful and appreciate. But to understand that it's again, not going to be that easy, natural, two-way relationship that other relationships necessarily are. Okay, so one of the things after we realize that that difference, that as parents, especially parents of adolescents, we have to appreciate is the word control, our comfort, and our seeking, an aspect of control. Everyone loves to feel like things are under control, like the children are under their control on some level. It's a natural feeling that makes us feel, you know, like things are not, you know, spinning all over the place. It calms us down. There's a wonderful fellow in my community who's visually impaired, and from when he was a young child. And he's shared with us in the community here a very enjoyable story that happened when he was young. We can learn a lot from it about control. So he could not see when he was a child, and he needed always to be walked by his mother to get to school each and every morning. And he was getting older, and his friends were able to go at that point, that age, on their own. But he, you know, being visually impaired, he could not go on his own. every morning it was, you know, somewhat embarrassing for him and humiliating to him. And his mother would have to hold his hand and, you know, walk him across the street and ultimately walk him to the school building. And the friendly security guard was there each morning, George, and he would say, hey, good morning. Make up the name of Mrs. Schwartz, and good morning, Joey. Each and every morning he was there. Now, finally, he was getting older, and his mother and him discussed, you know, that it was going to be the time where he can go to school on his own. And he was building up for it. He was super excited. Finally, you know, he knew the way, and he had a good sense of direction. He had a stick. He was going to be able to go make that walk on his own. And he finally, the day comes, and he gets dressed, and his mother tells him the route again and to be really careful, and he crosses the street and all that stuff. And he goes off and he starts his walk, and he can't believe it. It's a sense of freedom. He's finally doing this on his own, and he knows the way, doing it so many times. And he has a stick, and he crosses carefully, and he finally gets to the block of the school, and he finally gets to the school building, and he has this sense of independence and freedom. Finally, after all these years, being like everyone else, getting there on his own. And he walks up the steps, and he has such pride. And the guard is there, and he says, hey, good morning, Joey. And he hears the guard suddenly scream out, hey, and Mrs. Schwartz, have a wonderful day, you know, down the block. He realized that his mother was, you know, sort of walking, you know, half a block behind him, acting as though he was walking on his own that morning, but was there from a distance still looking. And we have a hard time. We have a hard time letting go, right? We have a hard time not holding on or not controlling. But we have to know the essence of what real parenting and what our job in everything is. But let's go specifically to parenting now for a minute. Our job is only and can only be about what we are able to do as parents, to model the best we can, to give over the most we can. And then the rest of it, we have to understand, is out of our control. And we have to understand that that needs to be the choice and the ultimate development of each and every one of our kids. Our job is to be good enough mothers, good enough fathers, and beyond that, we cannot be. And we get super frustrated when we feel the limitations of that control. Hey, he or she is not doing what they're supposed to, is not listening. And we start to, because we demand more control than we really have, we start to get into non-effective parenting modes, because we're pushing the control that we don't really have. And the ultimate control that we have is, hey, the one question is, am I doing what I can as a mother or as a father in our parenting? And if the answer to that is yes, there's so much then that is beyond at that point our control to then make our children do A, B, or C, or X, Y, or Z. We have to understand and let go of that insistence on more control than we really have. All of us are familiar with the wisdom of the Serenity Prayer, and that really is at the essence of parenting. The Serenity Prayer is, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. There's a lot of that in parenting. The courage to change the things I can. And we'll see tonight, the things I can have a lot to do with here, me, myself, as a father, as a mother, that I can change. Someone else I can't. The wisdom to know the difference. And that's what tonight's about. This wisdom of understanding the things that we can change much more effectively than our children. We can change ourselves. And what's amazing is, after we do change ourselves, that's the greatest chance that we have to ultimately cause a change in them. But it's not by wanting to change them. People don't change because we need them to change, or we want them to change, or they have to change. They change when they are ready for it. We can change ourselves, and that can inspire change. Yeah, we can get someone to maybe in the short term follow us when we're watching them, but ultimately, our job as parents is so much more than that. But when we're not looking, they'll do what they want to do anyways. So we have to realize, as mindful parents, that our job is to really be able to get ourselves under control rather than control anyone else. Now, there's a famous saying attributed to Yisrael Salanter and other people. And the saying goes, first I dreamed of changing the world. And then I realized as I got older, I couldn't change the world. At least I'm going to change my country. And then at least I'm going to change my town. And then I realized I can't do that. At least I'll change my neighborhood. At least my block. At least my house. Until finally I realized I can't change anything other than myself. But then by changing myself, I realized, oh, then I can also change this change that happens with my family and this change that happens with the block and the community and the town and ultimately the country and ultimately the world. So that's, you know, it's this paradox of what do I have control over and what don't I? I have control over a lot, but it's not the way I think I have that control. I don't have the control to really change and force anyone to do anything. But my greatest aspect of control is learning how to control my reactions, my parenting skills, my outlook. And then by changing that, that ultimately is the greatest power I have to changing indirectly the people around me. And that's ultimately our most effective place as parents. It's not what we say, but it's who we become, who we are, right? There's the famous song, The Cat's in the Cradle, and the words are, I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you. And that's the ultimate key to our raising the greatest children that we can. It's becoming ourselves, the role models. And there's a lot that we can do that we'll begin to talk about tonight. I have a question for each and every one of you to think about. Okay? The question is as follows. If I had to, if I had the opportunity to go to each and every one of your children, my children included, my teenagers, and I asked each and every one of them, without you and without me around, right? Someone was able to ask them, I want you to describe your father with a few words, with some description. I want you to describe your mother. Now, whether you're a father or mother, what do you guess, what do you think your children would describe you as? How would they, just take a moment, through their eyes, how do we see? What adjectives would they use to describe us? What positive qualities would they say about us? What negative qualities would they say about us? And I want you to spend a moment seeing yourself through their eyes. Would they talk about how patient we are, or impatient, how busy we are, how much time we do give them, how critical we are, how positive we are, and how judgmental we are, how accepting we are. What would they say about us? And it's an important question to begin again our own awareness of looking at ourselves, our own awareness. And so let's talk about not just the letting go of control, but let's talk about the other aspect, which is now, what can we control ultimately? It's not them. But like we said, it's ourselves. So the first thing is, how are we in stressful moments? Are we just very reactive? Or do we respond from a place of, you know, groundedness, a little bit more of a calm, sense, being centered. There's different ways of getting there. When the bullets are flying, when things get tense, or when something is done that is very much bothersome to us. To be able to pause for a moment, to breathe, to sense what's going on inside of us. And then from that type of a place, to be able to then not just react, but to respond. And here, I want to ask you another follow-up question, not just how we're seen by our children. Now let's look at ourselves. And I want us to each be honest. I want you to take a moment. What are your biggest triggers as a parent? Meaning, what are the situations, the challenges, the words, or the behaviors that most challenge, that most trigger, that most set off, whether it's an anger, a frustration, a reaction inside each and every one of you? I want you to think over the last 6 months, 12 months, and just become aware for a minute what that is. What do your children do? They can do a lot of different things, but some of the things we stay much more under control, and some affect us much, much more intensely. I want you to become aware of what those triggers are, what those strongest, most impactful things that they can do are. Remember, as a therapist, goes back around 8 or 9 years ago, I was sitting late at night with a couple, and towards the end of the session, we were going back and forth. The husband, I had said something in the session, a suggestion, maybe you can reach out, call her in the middle of the day or something. I forgot the exact suggestion. And suddenly he looked at me and said, "Wow, I never realized that. Wow, that's such a brilliant idea." And he was being very sarcastic at the very end. And as he was saying that, I realized inside of me that there was, with his words, there was such a trigger, of anger, of rage inside of myself. And people say all sorts of things all the time. And I realized right then, wow, sarcasm, me hearing that, for whatever reason, is this tremendous trigger inside of myself. Now, people can scream, people can fight, people can be angry, people, for whatever reason, it's done in that format. It's that awareness, that helps us. And the reason why that awareness of whatever that trigger is to you helps is because then you file it. I want each of you to file that one or two or three triggers away. Because when you now are prepared for it, you can stay so much more centered when you anticipate, oh, it's happening now. You have that awareness. It doesn't catch you, blindly, right? You have an awareness that that is something that is going to trigger you. And that, you're already very ahead of the ballgame when you know in advance what those triggers are. Oh, when my kid is dishonest with me, or when my kid is messy for some people, or when there's a religious thing that my kid is not doing. Whatever it is for you to anticipate it, to know, that's something, for whatever reason, it's a raw nerve inside of me. It's interesting to explore why specifically one thing is more raw. It probably has to do with our own upbringing or our own experiences or our own fears. One thing is going to be more sensitive to us for whatever reason than other things. It doesn't have to be rational, but we at least have to come to our parenting, our mindful parenting, prepared. I'm aware of what triggers are most challenging for me. And that's not the solution. How do I solve it? But at least it will keep me more responsive rather than just reactive. What it also helps is it makes us not so predictable. What do I mean by not so predictable? So many of us, we get into the exact same back and forth, give and take responses. We can almost be tape recorders, and our kids know it, and our kids can anticipate it. They're like, exactly, I know what daddy or tati or mommy or mom is going to respond. And they're right. 9 out of 10 times, they can write it on a piece of paper, and then we respond that way. Because what we're doing is we're being just reactive. And when we're predictable in that type of way, what our reaction is going to be, how exactly we're going to criticize them, how what exactly we're going to say, oh, you do that again, and then their ears just shut down, and their eyes roll, and they're not interested. Not interested. I was just, I was upstate over the weekend, and when you're in, a bungalow is here in New York, so everyone's sort of, for better or worse, we're you're on top of each other, and I hear a father and a, must be an older teen, having this heated discussion. You have to tell mom your schedule. Yeah, I have to tell her. I try to tell her, she doesn't have time to listen to me. We're going back and forth, this father and his daughter. And finally the daughter says, yeah, now we have to spend 3 hours talking about this. And then I was really listening. They're getting into the predictable roles. And then the father answers, 3 hours? He looks at his watch. That was 3 hours? That was around 27 minutes. Right? And then she storms out. The predictable responses. Kid doesn't have to be responded to. Was it 3 hours? Was it not 3 hours? When we're aware. What was he saying? The daughter was saying, I'm just sick of the conversation. It was way too long for me. But the father, I'm sure it's predictable. The father took it literally and then was able to respond that it wasn't the 3 hours. It was only 30 minutes, the conversation. To be able to just be much more aware of what is going on, what gets triggered. What was getting triggered in that father was very simple. The daughter was saying, it was 3 hours, she's going out of her mind, how much talking. So the father got very defensive. So if he would know in the future, my trigger is when someone insults me that they don't, it was way too long for them to talk to me. That's a trigger for him. Okay. If he would know that, then he wouldn't have to be reactive like he was so predictably in prison in that type of a conversation. I want to show you a very short clip. I'm going to share my screen with all of you. It's the dinner scene from the film Inside Out, which was a cartoon, very cute cartoon. Inside Out was different parts of the personality, the brain inside, each of the characters acting out, speaking out what was going on in the minds of each of them in the story that took place. It was a very clever film. And if you cannot hear, it's about 3 minutes long. I hope you can hear it and see it. If you cannot hear it, you can look after. It's called Dinner Scene from the movie Inside Out. If it's not on the recording as well, it's something that it can take 3 minutes to see. And if it doesn't, if it's not loud or you cannot see it, then all right, just hang in there for around 3 minutes and then we'll come right back. Okay, I'm gonna go right now to that. Let me go to share screen and we will be able to see that together.
As it turns out, the green trash can is not recycling. It's for greens, like compost and eggshells. Mm. And the blue one is recycling. And the black one
is... Riley is acting so weird. Why is she acting so weird?
What do you expect? All the islands are down.
Joy would know what to do.
That's it. Until she gets back, we just do what Joy would do.
Great idea. Anger, fear, disgust. How are we supposed to be happy?
Hey, Riley, I've got good news. I found a junior hockey league right here in San Francisco, and get this, tryouts are tomorrow after school. What luck, right?
Hockey.
Uh-oh, what do we do?
Guys, here, you pretend to be Joy.
Won't it be great to be back out on the ice?
Oh, yeah,
I Joy?
Because I'm not Joy?
Yeah, no kidding.
Did you guys pick up on that?
Sure did.
Something's wrong.
Should we ask her?
Let's probe, but keep it subtle so she doesn't notice.
So, how was the first day of school?
She's probing us.
I'm done. You pretend to be Joy.
What?
Okay.
It was fine, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, very smooth. That was just like Joy.
Something is definitely going on.
She's never acted like this before. What should we do?
We're gonna find out what's happening, but we'll need support. Signal the husband.
Ahem.
With a nice pass over the reed, comes across that right.
Uh-oh, she's looking at us.
What did she say?
What? Oh, sorry, sir. No one was listening.
Is it garbage night? We left the toilet seat up. What? What is it, woman? What?
He's making that stupid face again.
I could strangle him right now.
Signal him again.
Ah, so, Riley, how was school?
Oh, Riley! Are you kidding me?
For this, we gave up that Brazilian helicopter pilot?
Boo! I'll be Joy.
School was great, all right?
Riley, is everything okay?
Sir, she just rolled her eyes at us.
What is her deal?
All right, make a show of force. I don't want to have to put the foot down.
No, not the foot.
Riley, I do not like this new attitude.
Oh, I'll show you attitude, okay?
No. Stay happy!
What is your problem? Just leave me alone.
Sir, reporting high levels of sass.
Take it to DEFCON 2.
You heard that, gentlemen? DEFCON 2.
Listen, young lady, I don't know where this disrespectful attitude came from.
You want a piece of this, Pops? Come and get it!
Yeah, well...
Here it comes. Prepare the foot.
Keys to safety position. Ready to launch on your command, sir.
Just shut up!
Fire!
That's it. Go to your room. Now.
Foot is down. The foot is down.
Yeah.
Good job, gentlemen. That could have been a disaster.
Well, that was a disaster.
Come, fly with me, Gacinha.
So, I hope it's something that you were able to see, most of you. The usual predictable pattern. Parenting without awareness inside, right? Just playing out the same old script. How many conversations repeat themselves like that? But we become unpredictable in a good way when we're centered, when we know, hey, what's triggering us? And then staying much more calm because, hey, we can anticipate it. We're not just reflexive robots. Hold on, what's really going on here? It gives us an opportunity to break a cycle and to respond or choose not to sometimes, you know, not in that usual predictable way. Now, we've talked about letting go of some control and focusing on what we really have control over, which is who we are. Now, and how we respond, and how we look and see and perceive our kids. There's something else that can easily get in the way, and we have to be aware of, mindful of, and that's the ghosts of our pasts. Each and every one of us as parents were raised by fathers and mothers, some better than others, some more flawed than others. And each and every one of us in our own parenting are impacted by the way we were raised, for better or for worse. And part of our awareness, part of our mindfulness as parents is to give some thought to what has influenced, what has affected each and every one of us as fathers and as mothers. So I want to take a moment or two together. And I want to ask you, questions to think about. Number one, what was it like to be raised by your father and by your mother? For each and every one of you, I want you to focus first, if you had a father that raised you when you were growing up, what was a strength or some of the strengths of his, some of his positive attributes as a father? What were some of the challenges? What were some of his human shortcomings as a father? What were some of his limitations in parenting you? And how does that affect you if you're a mother or you're a father in terms of parenting your own kids? Does he have an influence? Do you copy? Or maybe you're the opposite and you overcompensate the other way. If he was too controlling, you can't control at all. If he was too critical, you can't set any limitations. I want you to shift now to mother. I want you to think about how she raised you. What were some of her strengths, her qualities that come to mind when she raised you? What were some of her limitations, her shortcomings in parenting you? How do you think that affects you as a parent? Are there things you want to continue from your own parents in terms of parenting your children? Other things you want to do differently, you don't want to continue. You want to change in terms of parenting. Just to pause and think about these things. Another important question, many of us are in a marriage raising our children, our teenagers. And some of you might be watching as a couple. Are there differences? It's really a rhetorical question. I'll say it as a statement. There are differences between you and your spouse in terms of how you approach raising your children. How do you navigate those differences? A very common thing is by nature be a little bit more lenient, the other one will be more strict. And then we polarize. I can't believe you're so strict, I have to be the lenient one. Or I can't believe you're so lenient, I have to be the strict one. And we polarize, meaning we move to farther positions. And I become the this and you become the that. And there'll always be one that's naturally more one way than the other. But the way to more effectively deal with that is, instead of polarizing that, we come in, meaning if I'm the more lenient one by nature, to realize, hey, I can get my other spouse to let go of some of their strictness if I come in a little bit more, then they can loosen up their reins, okay? So, or the other one can also say, if I loosen up a little bit my reins, the other one can be a little stricter. Instead, to be able to discuss our different styles. They have to be different styles. We're two different people raised in different homes. But to be able to at least come to our kids more often than not, it's not perfect, with a joint type of position, that they don't, they can't use one versus the other. So to also to be able to be aware of us as a couple, how we come to our parenting, what are those differences, and how can we best negotiate them or realize the different roles that we perhaps play, but instead of maybe polarizing so much, can we come in a little bit more where we don't have to take, you know, these extreme positions, you know, on that issue. The final area it's important that I want to talk about in terms of us as parents. So we have this ongoing work, right? Parenting is not some sprint that we're going to, you know, quickly run and accomplish. It's a long marathon, right? That doesn't end, right? Our entire lives, we God willing, remain parents and have that privilege and responsibility. So there are a number of things that I think we can pace ourselves and hopefully continually improve and stay aware rather than just reactive and reflexive in the way we parent. Can we create a vision where a mother or a father, the beginning of the day, what type of parent do I want to be? And to, you know, envision that, whatever the qualities are, whatever the most effective tools or skills about ourselves we know we can bring to parenting, whether it's compassion, whether it's love, whether it's patience, whatever it is, tolerance, whether it's care. Can we envision that in the morning for around 3, 5, 7 seconds, 10 seconds? What type of parent do I want to be today? Can we end the day for 3, 5, 7, 10 seconds with that? So what type of parent was I today? Did I meet that goal or that vision or that criteria from the morning? And just the simple vision in the beginning, the question at the end. If we do that over the course of our lives, we'll slowly, we'll incrementally move towards mindful and really growth-oriented parenting. There's also things that will come in contact with, or we have come in contact with in our parenting patterns that we don't like, that we need to and we want to change. We want to eliminate. We want to get rid of. How do we do that? Right? We scream too much. We criticize too much. We argue too much. We get caught into a cycle too much of it's pointless. Any behavior you want to reduce, literature shows there's something called just self-monitoring. Right? On your phone, there's a little notes section, or you can have a little memo pad and a piece of paper, and you just write the date, and you say, screamed again, 8/19/2020, 9:50 p.m., screamed, da 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 da. Just by monitoring, by writing any behavior that we don't like down, literature shows any behavior, it just reduces by the simple fact that we're just monitoring it, by putting it down, by writing it down, by creating a place that we're aware of it, okay? So just these three simple tools. Have a vision in the morning, what type of parent you want to be. Ask at the end of the day, how was I? And if there's any triggering behavior that we know is not good, that we want to reduce, to just have a space for ourselves. Just jot it down or type it down, and we'll see tremendous reductions in the amount of it. A very important, point as parents that we all have to constantly review. After we discussed how being mindful and letting go, but also improving, that parenting is messy. Parenting is not something that we're supposed to or need to be perfect at. You know, there's the story of a fellow who decided to be an appliance repairman. That was going to be his job. And he starts out his very first day, and he gets a phone call that there's a broken washing machine, you know, at the edge of town, at the end of town. He gets into his van, and he goes over there, and he gets there, and it's a mess, and there's a washing machine leaking, and he gets there, and he repairs it, and da-da-da. And then he has another message on his phone that someone's freezer is freezing over. The whole thing is full of ice, and he drives to the other side of town, goes there, gets there, and yeah, it's full of ice. It's one thing after the other. It's just constantly broken. And then another place he goes, he gets a call that there's a dishwasher that's leaking, and he gets there, and it's all leaking. The end of the day, his wife says, how's he doing? He says, you won't believe it. Right? I got one call after the other. This was broken, that was broken. I have to repair that, I have to get back in that. It was like everything was just broken wherever I went. And his wife said, I mean, you don't realize, I mean, that's your job. You're an appliance repairman. What did you expect? You know? And we complain, you know? I can't believe this is wrong. I can't believe that's wrong. We have to realize, you know? Maybe we didn't realize, myself included, when we signed up to parenting, it's an ongoing repair job. Not just about our children, it's about mainly ourselves. It's repairing ourselves. Because we come in contact with so many different character traits in ourselves that need improvement by raising our kids. You know, God gives us the kids that will test this or that, or bring out this or that about our own character. That either we just stay reflexive and, you know, and without any insight and just, you know, give the same predictable reactions our whole lives, or we start to realize, hold on a second, that's a trigger. Something is, well, how can I be more aware, know what's getting set up, and maybe respond from a whole different place, a whole different way? We can only have that, again, if we have a little bit of, you know, of Yishuv Hadas, and not just being, you know, flooded the first moment that we're treated, that we anticipate, oh, this triggers me, that triggers me, okay. Let me stay in that place, you know, of centeredness as a parent. The end, the final point is to also be mindful that there's a spirituality to parenting. Right? One of the descriptions of our relationship with Hashem is, right, he's we're going into El, Anili Dodi Dodi Ali. He's also a king, but he's a parent, right? He's Avinu, or there's the Ima Ilah, he's called also. There's a parent-child relationship. And part of the spirituality of parenting is realizing, hold on, right? The shortcomings of mine and of yours, of each of us, in that relationship of parent and child, right? Between our Creator and us, how much is tolerated, how much patience there is, right? And then we, as parents, we are able to bring that to our parenting, our children who are very imperfect, who we need a lot of patience for, right? So just to bring in that spirituality and that outlook of what our real role is and what we really control, ultimately. Our real control is never going to be making and demanding and insisting and forcing someone else to do X, Y, or Z. Our biggest power as parents is going to be to role model the people that we become as we're parenting, right? Like we said before, right? You know I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you. And that's scary, but it's also powerful. That's our real power as parents, to turn ourselves and develop ourselves. If our kids see that, ultimately, they will turn themselves and develop themselves as children into the people they need to. Along the lines of spirituality is to daven, is to constantly pray that we have the wisdom and we have the strength and we have the patience to be good fathers and good mothers, and that doesn't end, you know, and hopefully in that way we can have the wisdom to magically say the right things, not say the wrong things. And our children have the parents that they need to be able to guide them through these turbulent years. So that concludes our second week. Our role as parents, staying aware of what our triggers are, what our ghosts are, what we do have control of, what we really don't have so much control of. Next week, we will shift to understanding the times we are living in, 2020, what our children are going through with technology, with social media, really understanding from a deeper way what is going on, what it's like to be an adolescent. And in our final week, we'll then talk about the magic of connection, of how we really strengthen over these years the strongest weapon that we have, which is to build a kesher, to build a connection between ourselves and our teens. So those are the 2 weeks ahead. I will look if we have any questions in our box. Let's see what we have. Okay. Okay, great question. Our teen outright ignores our requests. It's small things like pick up the clothes, take out the garbage. The only way we can get his attention is by taking away technology, which he hates. How can we get him to actually listen without needing to threaten with repercussions? The question is, you know, is there any way aside for just threatening, which seems to be such a, an undesirable way, right? Ultimatums to be able to get our kids to do what we need to, what they need to. And sometimes, you know, we need to resort to them losing the privilege in order for them to do what we ask them. There's no question about that. I'm just going to add one little insight. Again, I don't know the specifics of the dynamics there. Very often, there is something else going on, and it's a symptom of a larger, bigger issue. This kid is not listening, not responding. Why is he not? You know, the simple thing that we're asking him or her to do. Now, is it a symptom of how they, in general, are feeling and experiencing where they're at in this family, in this relationship? Are they angry and upset and just not interested and feel in general like they're the only one who's always asked, you know, da 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 da. And therefore, whether it's right or wrong, them not doing that thing is not just here local, am I taking out the garbage or not, or am I, you know, putting away my clothes or not, but it's, I feel you're so unfair. It's like their little protest. Now, I'm not telling you a practical thing then how to respond differently, but if we at least appreciate, you know, is this an expression of something deeper, then we can at least begin to, you know, to address it at its roots. I'm not saying, sometimes we'll have to, you know, give the consequences here in the short term to get them to do the thing, but to at least appreciate, oh, maybe this is something bigger, and then that bigger issue over time to start addressing that, you know, speaking that out, or, you know, realizing is there truth to that or not, or is that the perception or not, where does that come from? So I hope that that you know, maybe adds a little bit to the ability to, you know, see that situation more broadly. Okay, for all of you, pleasure again to spend this time, and wish you all a great week. And next week, tune in. We have a great topic. We will really talk about the here and the now, 2020 technology. Hope to see you all then. Have a wonderful week. Thanks again.